Is the frequency in use? Is the frequency in use?
Yes, it's in use.
Wow, what a beautiful hum-free signal. You know, I went over to the bedroom about 10 minutes ago, and I was thinking of parking on 3995 just in case I heard a call from you, and I was playing the loop of our net. There were already two people on, one from West Virginia and one from, I forget, well, you could see yourself on your graph. And lo and behold, I picked the wrong frequency. I picked 3636, and if you did speak, I might not have heard you over those people, possibly, but the birdies were dead. The birdies were loud enough that I was happy to come back to hit them. So, hello, WB4AIO, Virgil 3. Just to tweak you and tease you a little, this is N2IRJ. Back to you.
Yeah, this is WB4AIO in 4 kilohertz, and you're sounding really, really good, Marty. By the way, Virgil, you know, it looks like an Italian word. It looks like it's Virguli, and I think Virguli is really some kind of Italian food. That's what I think.
Well, there are two other names for it, but they're normally not used. That's the one that was used that I looked up in old ham magazines. Manuals.
Well, anyway, just to make you happy, I'm going to say it your way. WB4AIO Virgule 3.
We should look it up in the dictionary, and maybe we could decode its it's true pronunciation, just like you live near Ligonier, and yet the correct pronunciation that we learned in school in our textbooks was Ligonier. In that case, the French.
Wow, I hear music in the background.
Yeah, it's really strong. It's powerful. Even with my beverage antenna, I can detect it's there.
Hey, the band is almost entirely empty. The band is almost entirely empty and perfectly clear. Let's go to 7.5.
Okay, I'm at 7.5. What were you at before?
I was using 4 kilohertz before.
That's what I thought. I was using 5, but now I'm up to 7.5.
Are you transmitting in 7.5?
Oh, excuse me. When will my brain ever work again? I was at the doctor's office today. Here goes. And seemingly from our recordings, the transition is doable whenever I'm keyed down. I will say that the new settings, this is the first time you've ever heard them, so I probably should give you the A-B comparison test. The transmit EQ is on. I think we decided that anything above 5 with this microphone, which happens to be the Samson, I should not use it. But we can come up with new rules after this test. And by the way, my power SDR several cycles ago, it went to dual screen. I might have to blow it up and then shrink it back down to get it to behave. I'll tell you a story about it misbehaving in a different way a little while ago. But this transmission, as I said, is with transmit EQ on internal. Now I'm turning it off
It is now off. I'll speak for a moment with it off so you can get used to the lack of treble, or maybe just the proper tasteful balance of treble and reverberation. When I came into the computer room, I was having high CPU usage, but not nearly as bad as when Callgraphs took its fit. And it wasn't Callgraphs this time, it was PowerSDR, making it go up to like 30 and maybe almost 40. Callgraphs, of course, was much worse when it was malfunctioning, when it was up beyond 70. But normally, with PowerSDR off, I get basically nothing. I get maybe a little 0-1. But with SDR on, I normally get from 8 to, say, 25. And it was like taking a lot more than that on a consistent basis. So I turned it off, and I then turned it back on. And initially it was just as bad, but then it seemed to settle down. But now with this dual screen thing again, this double image and screwed upness, I'm going to reset it. So you've now had an opportunity to hear me with the transmit EQ off, transmit EQ on, transmit EQ off, transmit EQ on, and it's now back to you. And 4KC calling is probably okay. That seems to be my default. I could have sworn I put it into 5, though.
Yeah, into IRJWB4AIO. Well, they both sound good. I think the EQ off sounds a little more natural, and with the EQ on, I am hearing some high-frequency noise when you stop talking, whereas I don't hear the high-frequency noise at all when you stop talking when the EQ is off. But they both sound crisp. I would say the EQ on sounds super crisp. I think the way I described it the other day was that it sounds like an FM broadcast receiver with the de-emphasis switched off, so you get like a super treble boost effect. But they're both pleasant, but I think the EQ off is more natural. So hey, it's really nice to transmit and receive in this bandwidth, and it's nice the band is clear. The overall band noise seems high, and the European signals are coming in stronger than normal, and that seems to have brought up like just like a broadband hiss all the way across the 75 meter band. So that's a little higher than normal, but you're way above that. You're your usual 20/9. At one point, you even hit 25/9. So you're doing well.
Well, I'm back to EQ off, and I'm at 7.5 kilocycles audio bandwidth. I haven't refreshed my screen yet, but I wanted to say that the mistake I made was I was going over to the receive. I was receiving in 5, and I was only still transmitting in 4. So I've since made that correction. So maybe we'll do another miniature version of the test we did the other day as I go down band again and find out in that critical region between the 5 and the 4K, you know, where or not I should use transmit EQ, because I like the idea of letting more of the natural mellow bass come in on the recordings. It's actually started to sound like your type of transmission. So I think your refinements here have absolutely improved things. The only thing is I don't know yet is how it sounds, you know, through the air on playback. And of course, the best is a native recording, which might follow. I am rolling tape, as they would say in the older days, but probably you are too. However, you know what? I can't even do a recording test for you right now because that part of the screen is grayed out. And I might have to start PowerSDR or at least resize it before I do a playback on your audio. Over.
Yeah, why don't you just take a moment and maximize the screen and then resize it back to normal and just see if that clears your graphics problem. It's probably just a graphics card problem with your computer, and it seems to be working fine, though. Everything sounds good. I am recording, so I will play back a recording. Or not play it back, but I will send you the recording, probably tomorrow morning. I'm getting tired now. We probably will not talk too long, but I did want to tell you about my success. But before I tell you about my success with the modifications to the amplifier, I just want to say that you're sounding as good now as you ever have. That Samson microphone has a very wonderful, mellow WGY broadcast sound. I love it. And I think it sounds better with the EQ off, although I can see under certain circumstances, if the band noise were 10 dB higher, where there might be an advantage to turning it on. And just probably wouldn't hear the high frequency noise if the band was noisier. But right now, it's better with it off, and you just sound delightful. You sound like one of the 3630 guys. That's what you sound like right now, Marty. WB4AIO.
Well, that's beautiful news. I was listening to them tonight, and instead of being on their normal frequency of 3636 or 3642, they were on 3645. And they said they were sick of the politics and the infighting and all that, and everything that we've gone through in our amateur radio network club, so to speak. They had it there, and yes, indeed. I was right the other day when I told you the one guy was mad at a couple others and vice versa, and they won't talk, and you know, or they call each other names on nearby frequencies. And so anyway, they decided to go up there. So I don't know if they will permanently stay there or not. I reverted back to 3636 for nighttime monitoring, but in the future I might use this frequency instead if we're going to be communicating with each other. What I did is I refreshed it. Everything came back. It enabled me to record you. So why don't I give you a sample of what you sound like at 7.5. Incidentally, you made it to a 3 over S9. 3 over S9. And here comes the recording.
I will send you the recording probably tomorrow morning. I'm getting tired now. We probably will not talk too long, but I did want to tell you about my success. But before I tell you about my success with the modifications to the amplifier, I just want to say that you're sounding as good now as you ever have. That Samson microphone has a very wonderful, mellow WGY broadcast sound. I love it. And I think it sounds better with the EQ off, although I can see under certain circumstances if the band noise were 10 dB higher, where there might be an advantage to turning it on, and just probably wouldn't hear the high frequency noise if the band was noisier. But right now, it's better with it off, and you just sound delightful. You sound like one of the 3630 guys. That's what you sound like right now, Marty. WB4AIO.
Back to you in real time.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that recording. You're coming in strong enough. You even hit 30 over 9 where I could really appreciate it. And, hey, I'm pleased. It's working well. I think my signal is now a little cleaner than it was before. And the reason is I've eliminated the 60 hertz modulation. I went in there today. I had a little difficulty mounting the signal transformer. It's a Signal Corporation center tap filament transformer, 16 volt filament transformer. There's a beautiful place to mount it, but the mounting tab was too small for the nut. So what I did is I enlarged the hole slightly, and then I used just a couple drops of Gorilla Glue, and that's holding it on there quite securely. So maybe doesn't look quite as elegant as the using another bolt or nut on the bolt to hold it on there. But the Gorilla Glue is holding it on very well. I made a twisted pair of wire to hook up to the filament chokes. from the two sides of the 16-volt signal transformer. And then I took the center tap and attached the bias lead to its new location, the center tap of the transformer, which now floats precisely between the two 6.3-volt AC lines. And after I did that, after I let the glue dry to a decent dryness level, then I tested it. And I tested it in the mode that is most critical for the hum modulation. I tested it in full carrier AM. And guess what? The hum is completely gone. There is not a trace of it on the scope. It is an absolutely clean, flat carrier. And not only that, but I, listening to your recording and also observing my own signal on the scope, I noticed that the SSB waveform looks cleaner too. So a certain amount of intermodulation on SSB is also now gone. So success, WB4AIO.
Okay, this is N2IRJ in Jackson, New Jersey, returning. I'm glad you gave me that transmission of long enough length so that I could evaluate your signal better. Yes, I can definitely hear it. Even though we were saying it was only a 5% ripple, are my ears that good? Or was it more than that? I mean, I can definitely say you sound better too. And I can only partially prove it to you now until I send you the hard copy, which I guess will be tomorrow also. But the signal, the QSB went down, and in this next recording you were down as low as an S8, but still perfectly copyable. And then you rose back up to an all-time high of 4 over S9. So I made a recording, and you probably might not want to hear all yourself this much, but I'd at least still give you a foresight, you know, on what you're sounding like. I don't know if we're going to lose the nuances over the air or not like this, especially when it went down to an S8, but you really, really are clean. I really like it a lot. Apparently, the way you're complimenting my Samson microphone. I'll play it back. Here goes.
As I've eliminated the 60 hertz modulation, I went in there today. I had a little difficulty mounting the signal transformer. It's a Signal Corporation center tap filament transformer, 16 volt filament transformer. There's a beautiful place to mount it, but the mounting tab was too small for the nut. So what I did is I enlarged the hole slightly, and then I used just a couple drops of Gorilla Glue, and that's holding it on there quite securely. So maybe doesn't look quite as elegant as the using another bolt there, nut on the bolt to hold it on there. But the Gorilla Glue is holding it on very well. I made a twisted pair of wire to hook up to the filament chokes from the two sides of the 16-volt signal transformer. And then I took the center tap and attached the bias lead to its new location, the center tap of the transformer, which now floats precisely between the two 6.3-volt AC lines. And after I did that, after I let the glue dry to a decent dryness level, then I tested it. And I tested it in the mode that is most critical for the hum modulation. I tested it in full carrier AM. And guess what? The hum is completely gone. There is not a trace of it on the scope. It is an absolutely clean, flat carrier. And not only that, but I, listening to your recording and also observing my own signal on the scope, I noticed that the SSB waveform looks cleaner too. So a certain amount of intermodulation on SSB is also now gone. So success, WB4AIO.
And now back to N2IRJ in real time. I was going to say to hold your thought, but I've held it so long, I'll let you speak first, and then I'll tell you some other details. Over.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for that recording also. I suppose if we record and play back each other consistently, we will double the length of our QSOs. Or maybe if we record and play back the recording and the playback of the other guy, we could multiply them infinitely, and eventually we wouldn't even have to talk to each other. We'd just keep recording the recordings and playing them back. How about that, Marty? WB4AIO.
Oh, it sounds like a caper you would come upon. The question that I had stored up, where I said to remember your thoughts and say them first, which humored me, is that I have the metering in the upper right corner on the mic function, and when I talk, I'm hitting it with a -6. As you know, we're running it lightly in the exciter there, that stage anyway, letting the amplification occur later to keep the distortion down. But anyway, what I was going to say, I was going to ask you, is it possible for me to talk whenever I'm playing a recording over the air to you? When I'm playing your voice back to yourself, can you hear anything? I think you can't. I think I have to wait until the recording is done. I whistled into the microphone at one point, and if you heard that, that probably was my voice, but I didn't see the meter change any. So I'm thinking that it's not possible to do both simultaneously. Over.
Yeah, that's right. You cannot. When you're using the internal recorder and playback function in PowerSDR, when you play that baby back, only the recording is going through your transmitter. Your voice will not be heard no matter how loud you yell.
Roger. The beverage antenna is either doing its job or the band shifted or both, but I haven't heard that station again in a long time. It only lasted for the first few minutes, and I was going to switch to the vertical antenna to find out if it came back, but since it's gone, I could still do the test if you'd like. I wanted to first describe to you my operations. As you know, I'm using the Samson microphone with the pots all set the way that we decided upon. I unfortunately, in this higher level position, have fan noise when I don't talk. I'll hesitate and let the AGC recover in both places, and you'll find out what I mean. My old target in the Apple computer room was to get it to a -42 at least, or better. And I had higher hopes over here, which I mentioned earlier, like an extra 6 dB. But this durometer starts at -25 decibels. And normally when I used to operate the old way, I would have it be totally off, non-visible, no LED whatsoever until I modulated. Now, when I don't modulate, and especially if I wait and let the fan noise ramp up, it illuminates two flickering ones. So whatever they're, it's too far away for me to see, but I know that the smallest value is -25, and then there's another one next to it. Those two are off and on. I'll do the test again about just letting my mic open, and we'll see how badly it ramps up. Maybe I'll even take a look at the amplifier. Here goes. Oh boy, I could see handling noise in there, and also I could see that I was putting out about 100 watts in background noise. That's when I let it ramp up, the AGC. Let me be quick. Yeah, when I'm quick, it drops down to about 10 watts, and then the AGC compensation brings it back up to 100. So the other way I'm operating is this. The microphone, I'm holding it in my hand. I'm listening to you, not with a headset, But with the Sony speakers, and there's no problem. It's very comfortable listening. You're filling the room and hunky-dory, as they say. N2IRJ, back to you. Over.
Okay. N2IRJ in the historic salt flats of central New Jersey, where the RCA Corporation tested the first ground plane antenna ever invented, and brought us the mellow audio of the 77DX ribbon microphone. This is WB4AIO, Virgule 3, near Beaverdale, Pennsylvania, where beavers are just all over the place, coming right back at you. Well, Marty, let me tell you something. You need to export your database. You need to take a photograph of the Behringer, because right now, don't ever touch anything. Your station sounds as good as it has ever sounded. It is just wonderful. The noise is not objectionable. It's audible when you stop talking, but hey, that's just the WCRO effect. It's no problem. When you're talking, it's way, way, way below your audio, and your audio is clean, clean, baby, clean. You are ready not only to go on 3636, you are ready to join the big-time hi-fi guys on 3630, W9AD and WB9DNZ and NU9N. You are ready to join those guys, K2WS. You're ready to join those guys and be fully part of that scene right now. You sound great, and I'm not kidding you. You're ready to go. You're ready to switch to AM also and talk to KK4IBG and K1KBW and all the rest of the hi-fi guys, WA1QIX even. You're right up there. You're in their league, baby. You're doing it. You've done it. It sounds wonderful. Over.
Oh, great. With your help and with the playback, the virgin playbacks of the SDR, where you don't hear any coloring, and of course, they're exchanging our tapes, our recordings, our MP3s. That's what did it. The ability to hear oneself and for you to analyze. And I'll bet you any money you even maybe tweaked your knobs ever so slightly before you quit touching them. Over.
Well, it's been an evolutionary process, but it's definitely working well right now. Oh, by the way, this amplifier has a new name now.
Well, it's not Henrietta. What did I give up?
Well, you know, it's called the Clipperton. It's called the Clipperton L. So now I'm going to make more modifications, but it's well on its way. It's now going to be the Super Duty version of the Clipperton L. So that's SD, right? Super Duty. And so instead of the Clipperton L, it's now the Clipperton LSD.
Oh, okay. The lysergic acid diethylamide, or the limited slip differential. Really kind of you to say what you said. I'm going to be totally pleased when I hear the reception at your end. But well, let me say this: the ESSB guys downband, the quasi ESSB guys, they mentioned last night that they originally were up in that part of the band, like 38, 28, we'll say. I'm not sure. And the first party you mentioned, I was thinking that they were AM, but then you secondarily mentioned that I'm even ready to join the AM. So maybe those guys are just ESSB guys like we are, ESSB guys, I should say, extended and enhanced single sideband. And yeah, I'm glad you have the LSD on your side. That's a good thing. It'll give you enlightened ideas, and we'll go many far great cosmic places. Over.
Yeah, okay. Let's see if this works. I'll play yourself back. I hope I'm coming in well enough to make a recording viable. Hold on here. Let's see if this actually works.
Yes, the ESSB guys downband, the quasi ESSB guys, they mentioned last night that they originally were up in that part of the band, like 38, 28, we'll say. I'm not sure. And the first party you mentioned, I was thinking that they were AM, but then you secondarily mentioned that I'm even ready to join the AM. So maybe those guys are just ESSB guys like we are. ESSB guys, I should say.
So there you have it. That was N2IRJ on Memorex.
Okay, I'm back. I had to resize my screen because it messed up again, and right now the stop-start button is hidden by gray, but I just hovered over it and it became visible. So I guess technically maybe I should do a resizing again, but everything is back and visible. If I wanted to, I could make a recording of you in return, but I think I've tired you out on that a little. But those guys down band on 36, well, they're on 3645 tonight. They had a problem. Well, I finally figured it out. The question that I sprung on, was it John? You know, KB10XT, I think. You know, the one that I like his audio and everything. Well, yes, they did explain that they have different tastes, and basically, after a hard day's work, just wants to come home and talk to people in comfort, and in the process think around and, you know, get things better than they were, but not take it to the point of where it becomes the primary job. The intelligence being communicated over in the friendship is more important than everybody being able to be heard in ESSB. And there were about five different other reasons, but it all went back to my original assertion to him that he was holding back, and he is. And it's a darn shame. I wish he would at least transmit in the 4KC bandwidth. And, you know, he does at times, fortunately. But like he said to me before, only that NP2R or something to that effect, a transplant from Puerto Rico, that call sign station, he has flexibility. I mean, these other guys have the ANAN, or however you pronounce it, by Apache Laboratories or something, and I don't know how wide they go, but I think they go as wide as a flex, and so I don't know why the guys who are using those can't appreciate the extra benefit to full fidelity on a clear band, which they have down there. And I'll also, if I remember, or you remind me, next go around I'll tell you about what they said regarding an AC hum. Over.
Yeah, okay, very good, Marty. By the way, I used that recording I made for you. Let's see if I can play it without causing any problems. That recording I made for you, this is a wonderful way to tune up a tube amplifier. It draws hardly any plate current, but it produces full peak output. It's the best tuning aid I've ever had. It's the one I made with Audacity. It's a pulse here. Let's see if I can play it. Yeah, there it goes. Very, very low average power, but very, very high peak power. And that's what I've been using to tune this thing up, and it really is very helpful.
Yes, they sell those, but they sound differently, the commercially purchased ones. Last night on 3645, somebody was using one on top of the guys, and the guys were making it through, but it was much like yours. It was a different pattern, but it wasn't, I don't think, yours at all. And it was, I think, even maybe higher peaked and, you know, louder. And I think it was pulsed at a higher frequency, too. But I'm not sure. By any chance, did you hear that one down there tonight on 3645? It's just a wild coincidence that we came across the same thing here all within a couple hours. Over.
Well, no, I didn't listen down there tonight at all. What I did was, after I made the modifications to the Clipperton LSD, I got on AM to test it. And I had a QSO with a KB3RDT on 3885. And a guy broke in from Massachusetts. RDT is also in western Pennsylvania, but the guy in Massachusetts broke in with a nice high-fidelity signal. That was fun. And then I came up here to 95 for a little while, but nobody was around. So I went back down to the AM window, and I had a QSO with KK4IBG, Bobby, running a Class E rig, and got a good report out of him, and also talked to his friend Sid in western North Carolina, KG4NVZ. And In the process of having those AM QSOs, of course, I discovered that I had succeeded in my goal of eliminating the design flaw in the bias supply. So that's what was occupying me. Then when I got done with all that, then I came up here again and was hoping to find you. And by George, I did find you, WB4AIO.
This is N2IRJ in Jackson, New Jersey. I was here, and I monitored some, but very little. It's possible we were both monitoring at the same time. Didn't throw out a call. Here's why. I was supposed to have a conversation with NISA at 7 because I called earlier in the day and said I didn't think I could make it, you know, and let's, you know, kick it on back. And she said, how's far? And I said, well, you know, at least 10 o'clock, I told her about my doctor appointment today and all the other running around at the store would be doing. And by the time I got home, I was so tired, but it was a little shy of 10, so I rested my eyes, and the next thing I know, it's like, 12, 10 in the morning, Monday. I guess today's Monday? Today's Tuesday. Yeah, today's Tuesday. Excuse me. So anyway, I sent her an email, but I don't know if she has any way to get it since she's reluctant to tap off of her neighbors. But I think she does have her own ADSL, but you know, she can't use it, of course, when she's on the telephone with me on the LibertyNet. Before I tell you about their AC hums and all down band and other comments. Let me find out, what did I want to find out? Oh, yes. Muster was down, I think you said earlier, Tang. You wrote them, and I was wondering how long it took for them to write you back, and whether it was down very long, because when I tried looking at the map for activity, it was just spinning around and around and saying Ajax error. I've already seen it say Ajax 2 error, but I don't know what that means. I'm ready to hear what transpired during today.
Well, the problem I was having that I was writing to tech support about this morning had nothing to do with the streaming server, had nothing to do with 3950.net. It had to do with another website that I operate. And it's got some problems, and I think the problems are related to the hosting company. And, it's working again, but they didn't do anything. I think it's got some kind of intermittent problem. They claim that some of my scripts, it's a database-driven website using a content management system, and they claim that some of the scripts are using too many memory resources on the server, and every now and then that causes it not to serve the pages. And they tell me I should just get a dedicated server. That's expensive. But the thing is, I have all my other sites on shared servers, and they're not generating this problem. They're working perfectly. So I really have not gotten to the bottom of that problem, and they have not gotten to the bottom of that problem. But it had nothing to do with the errors you were seeing. I suspect that I suspect if you leave that tab open on the CentovaCast control panel, I think sometimes it gets its brain scrambled and you just have to reload the page or maybe even just totally restart Firefox. And then everything clears, because I was there several times today, and it worked flawlessly for me every time. So I don't think there's a problem there. I think everything is working fine.
This is N2IRJ. I understand completely, and I await further info on all that. As to whether or not we're going to have problems as things get even more heated in terms of user participation. For example, during the day I'm monitoring the map, and people really are tuning in now. I mean, we used to see zeros and things like that. Now I'm seeing like threes, fours. And like I said, clear tonight, earlier, about 2 hours ago, I saw two, and then I became the third party to log on. So it's definitely on the rise on the listening stream, as well as the downloads, I guess. So anyway, the microphone situation I wanted to tell you about was Don Band, the quasi-ESSBers, they're trying to help their friend with an Alpha 78A, I think, solve what they called a hum problem, and they were sending them on wild goose chases. They were putting ferrite beads on the power line coming in and on the microphone cable and everything. And I identified it right away as being something to do with the audio. It sounded to me like it was not the fan, which it turns out it was not, blower noise. It was kind of like when you're missing a ground or something on a microphone high impedance device, and it's picking up like AC hum, ambient, a coupling with something, and transmitting that. And that's exactly what it turned out to be. They think they solved the problem, but they did make it clean. They got rid of the noise, but it required his moving away from, I think it was the Alpha. And I know that a similar thing happens with my Sennheiser with the Astron power supply. There gets to be an inductive coupling. He was using a dynamic microphone, by the way, not capacitor. They were claiming the capacitance-driven microphones are more susceptible to that, but I thought it would be just the opposite because it doesn't really have the kind of coil system that this dynamic mic does. But he ended up moving 2 feet. It's sort of like the RF in my shack at one point, where moving 2 feet would change everything. He extended the length. It was a separation distance thing. But I still have a suspicion that there's something not quite right with the grounding on the microphone. I've been taken down this trail before, and then they later revealed that he was using a flex of some sort, and it was a balanced input, so maybe he really was using an XLR, which surprised me, because so many of the other guys were talking about the other rigs they were using, and they didn't have that capability to try to keep it clean the whole way through. With that, I'll turn it back to you for a comment near Beaverdale, Pennsylvania, N2IRJ.
Yeah, WB4AIO. Right at the moment you said that, a beaver ran right over my shoe. Well, maybe the guys on 3636 need your help, because it sounds like you... you have an ear for what the problem was, so I guess you need to figure out some way to transmit down there without tripping out your amp, because believe me, your sound is unimpeachably good.
Oh, I like that. That really makes me happy. Can you imagine what it's going to be like when I not only have LSD on your side, but I have Henrietta on my side.
Oh, yeah, that'll be nice. You're doing well right now, though. You're 25 over 9, only 5 dB under the channel master himself. So you've really got nothing to complain about right now.
Yeah, but boy, when we bump heads, he sure wins.
Yeah, maybe. But you could say that about almost any station.
Well, like I said, historically, when we do tests together, he would be able to do maybe half the country, and around in Wisconsin there, SWL, so that we were even with, and I was slightly winning. And by the time we got to the West Coast, I was 1 dB stronger, or excuse me, one S unit stronger than Vic, which is a large amount. Over.
Yeah. Well, with the Clipperton LSD, it has a special dynamic enhancement circuit that it actually makes it the, once you get past that Wisconsin point, my signal actually starts to get not just stronger relative to other stations, but it actually just starts to get just stronger. It's about a dB per 100 miles. And so you go about 500 miles, and it's 5 dB stronger. And eventually you get out to Japan, you know, where it's thousands and thousands of miles, and it's actually local quality.
Are you testing my sense of humor?
You can call it whatever you want, but that's how the LSD works.
Okay. Well, that's even better than Henrietta. Henrietta has its limitations. That's why I believe in reserve power, though. So we'll make it through the night. It turns out, to the secondary story involving audio, I am remembering it involves something that I would like you to do, and that is research in your spare time. About a mic rack, like a stand for me, a bass stand, or the other type that we talked about. The way I feel, I don't feel like leaning over hunched. I don't want to have to do that. I want something that, like right now I'm in the captain's chair, the operating chair, and I'm leaning back a little and feeling comfortable, and the microphone head is probably not quite 3 feet away from the screen, and that's where it's nice to operate. The main purpose of my bringing up this subject of needing it to prevent the handling noise that you've been hearing on me, they told us, the one man down band tonight, last night, you know, he told a story about tracing down what seemed to be an AC hum. And after spending much time, he found the problem. And one of the guys down there timed it and said that they figured it out in 18 minutes. But like I said, from the very beginning, I knew where the problem was. I knew that it was really an audio. I've run into this, and you've run into it, no doubt, millions of times. With something unterminated properly, and you know, the kind of hum it picks up, it's real. It's sort of like a fingerprint. It's pretty precise. I'm surprised they didn't know that. They had him try so many other things. You know, he was grounding the amplifier and you name it. But they're all a bunch of good buddies and happy, and I'm happy for them. And anyway, the point is this. The man who had a separate problem previously finally solved it. It took far more than 18 minutes. He found that when his microphone was put into the stand and he was talking and the stand was on his desk, apparently the way everything else was arranged, the desk itself was transmitting a 60 hertz vibration. It was coming up through the bottom and making his microphone rattle. I don't know how well insulated my element is compared to the outside world, and I don't want to depend on that. I want to have a base that does not transmit any noise up through the bottom, you know, regardless of what frequency, you know, in this room is working against me, you know, my Astron or anything like that, 120 cycles maybe. I want to say that he did say he solved it by putting foam padding under it, but I don't want something that I have to worry about not being heavy enough. Something that's going to, if I pull on the cord, fall off the table and all that. You know, that's what I'm looking for, just so you know. Something that right from the factory is right and has the, you know, foot pads of the proper durometer, you know, number to be proper in that capacity of buffering. And in fact, the whole design should be smart. I'll probably have to pay a penny, pretty penny for that, and especially with this new requirement. Maybe I have to... the microphone gets heavy after a while, you know, just holding it here like this. But I wish I could have it held here like this and then just reposition my body in the chair in different ways and speak into it. And I could be happy with that. So with that big assignment, I'm turning it back to you and to RRJ.
Beautiful transmission, WB4AIO. Marty, when you are sitting in your comfortable position in the captain's chair, and the microphone is in its optimal position, is the microphone the center line of the microphone, is that over a flat portion of the desk where a stand could go, or is the microphone actually off the edge of the desk in the front direction? In other words, if you drew a line straight down from the geometrical center of the microphone, would it hit the desk or would it hit your lap? Over.
It would hit my lap. In other words, we almost would need something hanging from the ceiling, as though, as goony as that might be, like the Apple computer monitor in the bedroom, the master bedroom. I don't know if such a thing is made. And by the way, as for talking on this mic, I've been semi-close talking it, but not close talking it to give you too many peep-pops. But if they're there, you can let me know. We can always look into a sock to put on, if you think that might help and not degrade other parameters. I'm speaking straight into it. I'm not cross-talking it. Okay, right now I'm cross-talking it like the Sennheiser once, but I don't like it because the drive isn't enough. And the same with this one. I don't get enough drive when I cross-talk it, so I'm speaking straight into the microphone. So yes, if there could be some situation that would allow it to be about a foot and a half beyond the desk, and with the ability to also move, you know, when I get close, if I want to get up close, like right now I'm close to the screen, I'm close to the keyboard, and now the microphone is about 6 inches inboard from the edge of the desk. Do you have a better understanding now? Over.
Yeah, that's why I asked that question. So if you wanted to go out where the center line of the microphone is over free space instead of over the desk, then a desk stand won't cut it. We'll have to find some kind of boom, either the spring-loaded adjustable boom or the rigid boom with you know, adjustable slant and adjustable height, like the one I have. And you never know if these booms are going to transmit floor vibration or not. It's really, there's going to be experimentation involved. But it sounds like some sort of boom is necessary. Maybe sometime tomorrow you can measure the depth of the desk. That will give me some idea of what I'm dealing with. And we'll see. We'll see. We'll investigate and see what's available. You're right. A really good boom might cost a lot more than that microphone cost. WB4AIO.
Yes, since you swear by this microphone so much, I wish we would have gotten more. I wish I had two of these instead of two of the Sennheiser headsets, because they've never been put to use together at the same time on a Skype call as I had envisioned. And I really need to return the one soon. They might be out of elements by now. It's been a full year since they've been out of production, actually more than a year. But at least I'll have two good backups. I hate it that they spend so much money for a supposedly good brand name. Maybe it's giving me what it was intended for, you know, a sports field or a helicopter or something, I don't know, over.
Yeah, well, it's not bad, but it just doesn't match the fidelity of the Samson. It is better in rejecting noise, but it does not have the super smooth sound that I like so much. By the way, when you talked across the Samson, it still sounded good, but it brought up a lot of room reverberation because your vocal cords and mouth were off axis, and so there was a lot more room reflection, and it really sounds better when you talk straight into it. There are some occasional P-pops and handling noise, but to me, I don't care, because the microphone sounds so good that I don't really care if it has a few P-pops in there. It doesn't bother me at all. It just sounds so nice. Over.
Yeah, like you said yesterday, or the other day in our queue, so it shows that I have good bass response. You're saying like maybe down to 30 hertz. So I'm happy. I'm not sure if you were the one, or they were talking, I think, about frequency response. And I think they were saying that something goes on around 50 hertz or something in the broadcast industry. They don't broadcast below a certain frequency. They're going back to, I guess, old television and everything, maybe. But back with that signal configuration, I don't know if there was some artifact or some digital information, not digital information back then, but some kind of carrier or I don't know what, but something about they theoretically could go down to zero, you know, but they made it above this, I want to say it was something above 50, because if they would have done it right at 50, which they would have liked to do, there was something there already. Ring any bells? Over?
Not really, but there are some satellite downlink receivers that I used to work with when I was a broadcast engineer. And they probably don't do this anymore, but back in the 1980s and early 90s, some of these satellite downlink receivers that they did use for radio networks they actually used subaudible tones like 25 hertz and 27.5 hertz tones to do various control functions. And so they had to have a very steep digital high-pass filter at 50 hertz or so to filter all of that out so that it would not be rumbling the woofers of the consumer who was listening to your audio. So maybe it was something like that. I also know that some broadcast audio processors have arbitrarily made the decision that in AM broadcasting there's no need to ever transmit anything below 50 or 60 hertz, and they have very steep brick wall filters that filter that stuff out. So there's not a lot below 50 hertz. Traditional FM broadcasting started out even with a 50 hertz to 15 kilohertz definition. But there are some voices that go down to 50, even a very few of super voice of God kind of announcers who actually have pipes that go down to 40 hertz. And there is considerable musical content down to 40 hertz or so, and every now and then even below 40 hertz. So I hate to see a brick wall filter at 50. But probably with my voice or your voice, you wouldn't even notice a brick wall filter at 50, unless it had ringing or a lot of ripple in it or something, and then it might trash up your audio. Anyway, it's better to if you're going to filter the low end, and I do that to take subsonics out, it's better to have the filter lower in frequency, and then it has less of an effect on the audible spectrum. But there are different philosophies. WB4AIO.
Your explanation to me makes total sense. It's sort of analogous to the subsidiary communication authorization that was used on FM radio. And there they often, instead of transmitting other music or something, they used it for data relay back to the to the transmitter station from the studio. Over.
Yeah, I've heard of that. There's some subsonic noise here in this neighborhood. I don't know where it's coming from, but this large diaphragm condenser microphone picks it up very well. And I don't like it because it intermodulates with the low frequency part of my voice. And the funny thing is the condenser mic picks it up very well, and yet I cannot detect it in my ears when I'm just sitting in the room. I guess it's there, but the electronics seems to pick it up better than my ears do. I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know if it's just a rumbling from traffic out on the U.S. highway nearby or the city street a few blocks away, or if it's movement of tectonic plates. I don't know what the heck it is, but it's there. I can see it on the scope and on the spectrum analyzer. So I do roll off the subsonics. I have a fairly gentle high-pass filter that starts at 40 hertz, 12 dB per octave in the Rolls equalizer. And that knocks it down quite a bit, but it's fairly gentle. And it doesn't affect even 40 hertz. It just starts at 40 hertz, so it doesn't really affect my voice at all.
It's humorous that you said about the tectonic shifting, the plate shifting, because that was something that I actually thought of. I was thinking, this hour of the night, there's not much traffic on the roads, and does it come and go, or is it persistent? And if it's persistent, maybe it's really being excited by a fan or something else, your PC, and it's a harmonic of some other frequency or a half harmonic, I don't know what to say on that, whereby you are picking it up again in a place that normally an ordinary person with ordinary gear would not hear.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It seems like it's always there, but I've never measured it to see if the level varies throughout the day. And on this particular microphone with my particular circuitry, the way I have things set, it seems to peak out at about 25 hertz. I guess that's low enough to be called subsonic. Maybe there are components that are even lower, but the amplifiers in the Behringer or mixer, that's the first thing the condenser microphone hits, maybe they can't pass the lower components. I don't know. It's there, though, whatever it is. By the way, you were right about the transformer magnetic coupling. Dynamic mics are much more prone to that than condenser mics, although I suppose condenser mics always have a preamplifier built into them. At least modern day condenser mics have a preamplifier built right into the microphone. I suppose some of those preamps might be transformer coupled and have transformers that were susceptible to large magnetic fields such as those which might surround a plate transformer in an amplifier. But my experience is that dynamic mics are far more susceptible to that. You've got to keep them away from power supplies. WB4AIO.
I'm glad you clarified that. That makes about three observations I made correct, and I really could have helped them down there. I could have benefited if I could operate on that frequency because of my, with my Vizwar problem, I can't. Even though they're up on 3945, I didn't try, but as you know, when we tried 3636 the other night, I couldn't, and 45 so close, it would be on a hair's edge, especially if I'm trying to make a detailed back and forth reliable transmission, and they managed to help their buddy anyway and they'll sort of rest out. I also learned possibly something interesting, unless it too is disinformation, accidentally of course. They were saying that on that Alpha 87 you can't transmit 200 watts into it or you'll blow the pin diodes. And the guy who owned it said that he was not putting 200 watts into it when the Alpha was on. He knew better than that. He only needs to drive it at some low level, like 42 watts for full power. And what he did is he simply hit the bypass, just like I have a bypass control on this Ameritron. But they says, no, it doesn't matter. As long as it's turned on at all, these pin diodes can get damaged with 2,000 watts or more, or excuse me, 200 watts or more. And you have to keep it under about 150. So I wonder if my Ameritron could have that problem. Not that I have to worry about it, because my radio doesn't produce that much power like my Yaesu did, but I think it's pretty damn dumb of them to make something so marginal like that in a world where you can buy a 400-watt radio straight from the factory, such as the Yaesu that replaces mine. N2IRJ, over.
Yeah, well, I don't know that much about those amplifiers. I do know that the Alphas with the 88 series tubes in them, the rare ones, the ones that are hard to find now, I know that they have a lot of gain and that many, many people, you know, can get full legal output of those things with just a 15 to 25 watts of drive PEP. And if you hit them very hard, I don't know anything about the pin diodes burning out, but if some of those rigs, you know, if you hit them a lot harder than that, that amplifier tube is going to give up the ghost, and they are now expensive.
Yeah, they always were. That's why I always liked my tube in my amp, which at the present is not with us, but it will be. I'm using this solid state one, as you know. It has a forgiving tube. The grid dissipation is like 225, and it watts, and it can take a beating. It's used in commercial service. You know, typically runs a year. It's continuous duty, and it's cheap. It's cheap compared to some of the amateur tubes. I really shouldn't say cheap. It still is expensive, but it's not in the $1,000 price range or anything like that.
Yeah, it remains a valid choice. I don't think anybody would build an amp with an 8874 in it, though, these days. That would be kind of crazy.
Yes, I'm still glad you can get the 6JS6. I think that's your tube. I've heard of them being so popular and available. They're not 572Bs. I forgot what your tube complement is.
Oh, the 6JS6s are not in this amp. No way. I think that's the ones that Scott's using in his, not in his amplifier, but in his transceiver. But maybe the Drakes use those also. But no, this the Clipperton LSD uses four 572B triodes in parallel.
Okay, that's at a 572B. What does the B mean?
It stands for bodacious.
Okay. Well, I'll stick with my Svetlanas. I love them. My iMacs all failed me, and the Russian tube just has taken a pounding for all these years, and it's not fighting me back, unless it's going a little soft. I don't know. But Pat claims that with the proper input tuning, I could get out, you know, a substantial amount of power. He had two 3CX 10,000A7s to build an amplifier, but he decided against it because he said, you know, I've played with, you know, extra power, you know, 1,000 watts, and that's about where it's sweet. After that, it starts getting real expensive and difficult. You know, the coax starts breaking down on you, and you have to go to a different kind of feed line, and every element fights you. You know, voltage requirements and parts availability, and so he said he gave the tubes away, I think.
Yeah, I can understand that. Well, anyway, the 572Bs are working well here. I even tested them on 160 meters during the day today, and they're working fine on 160. I still want to increase the loading capacitance on 160 because I can't quite load it up to full power, but it's, you know, within a dB and a half or something from full power. So even if I never make that mod, the Clipperton LSD will still do pretty good on 160. So anyway, I'm making progress here at AIO Laboratories, and so I certainly have been ignoring some of the other things I should be doing, but I guess that's because there's just one of me. If I do a lot of ham radio progress, then the progress in other fields suffers. Like right now, I'm definitely should be sleeping, Marty.
Okay, I'll give you a reprieve on that. I understand completely, and I should be filling out paperwork, but I've so far not done that, but I'm getting closer to it. I think my medical condition is improving ever so slightly. I told the doctor. He gave me a new pill, and this new pill is something that I took 20 years ago from the Life Extension Foundation, and it was very helpful to me. It was just pricey, and you had to take so many of them so often, so many times during the day. Sublingually, they were. I want to say B12, vitamin B12, and apparently these evil pharmaceutical companies have taken a natural vitamin now and patented it somehow, which shouldn't be allowed, but they're making big bucks off of it, so I hope I don't have to pay a lot for this. But supposedly it helps with, I want to say, serotonin reuptake. It makes more passes without getting metabolized. It's kind of like Depo Provera or Depo, any of the other Depos that they have that prefix in them. They have it's the drug with an extra chemical added that makes it hard for the body to get rid of it the first pass through. So it gets, you get to do more with less drug, and perhaps with less drug there will be fewer side effects, negative side effects. Let me think. There is something else important. Yes, here it is. I forgot to tell you that Pat said that on your amplifier you have another problem besides the AC hum, which is not a real problem like the AC hum that you fixed. Boy, it does sound beautiful. And it's this. It has to do with those capacitors for loading on 160. He said they're absolutely inadequate. People, even with brand new Clipperton L's, would replace them and stack more in parallel. And he suggests that that's what you do immediately. I mean, he just swore by it. And then he said, also, you need to change the tap point on the coil for 160. But he didn't tell me by how much. Well, I guess I know the direction, more inductance. But he said it's not all that much. There's enough extra stock on there, I think. But if you do those two mods, he said, not only does it prevent problems, but it actually puts out more power. It actually puts out more power, and it's not straining. You're not, hurting it in any way, on sideband usage anyway. Over.
Yeah, well, I'm going to make some of those mods. I've, as you know, I've been collecting parts to make these mods for a while. And I have some really nice high RF current glass capacitors, which will physically fit in the space and yet have about 50% more capacitance. And I will be using those. I have one for 160 and another one for 75, which should put the LC ratio more where it needs to be on 75 also. Right now the loading capacitor, I think, is just fully meshed, and I'd like to have a little bit more adjustment range on both bands. But anyway, yes, I'm well aware of that. I'm hoping I don't have to change the inductor tap. That's a little bit more mechanical work, but I can do that if I have to. Anyway, I will conduct experiments. The way it is now is working okay on 160 and very well on this band. But I'm hoping it will work even a little bit better when I get done with it. So I've also got a brand new Ameritron plate choke that I'm going to be putting in so that this thing will operate on 17 meters. So lots of changes, but I made the first one today, and I'm very pleased. That was really the most important one, I think, getting rid of that bias supply problem. I did not like that. And I've still got a few things I need to clean up around the shack here with connections and stuff. I did solve my RF ingress problem on the low end of 75. It's working beautifully down there now. However, I had to use alligator clips to ground a couple of things together, and I hate that. I guess I'll have to make some kind of more permanent connection. And getting rid of the RF introduced a very, very slight buzzing sound, but I don't think it's even audible. It's like 60 dB down or something like that. Probably completely masked by the computer fans. But I don't like that either. So it's a constant battle against RF badness. But hey, I think I've got some RF goodness to go with the RF badness. WB4 Aeschylus Icarus Oedipus.
Well, I'm glad you know what capacitors he speaks of. He said you can change the capacitors first, and that's where you'll notice the power increase. And then there's yet another fix. Some people have replaced the lid with plexiglass because they crammed too much into a small area, and the lid is it needs more room in there. It's somehow shunting the power back to the chassis ground, and you're losing power that could be going out into the air. In a way, I know maybe you hate to make such a modification, but he said try operating it without the lid. You'll see. And he said that. Oh, by the way, on this capacitor change, are we talking about the same ones, I hope? I mean, are you talking about, like, the loading capacitor for the antenna, like, the side? Or I think you're talking about on the input where if you change the capacitance to be higher, you could only do it by small amounts because it would change your Q. And you'd have to retune more often, although it is cleaner that way and more efficient, and that's what I've done with Henrietta, N2IRJ.
WB4AIO. I am talking about the Pi Network output loading capacitors. They definitely need to be larger on 160, and they could even stand to be upped a little bit on 75, so that's what I plan to do with the Clipperton LSD.
Okay, that's going to be neat. You'll have a custom amplifier, and so will I, eventually.
By the way, the 572Bs glow a dull red when I operate AM.
Oh, What kind of carrier?
I run about 250 watts carrier output on AM.
Okay. I'm impressed.
About the same power that you it's about the same power that you run on that amplifier on AM.
Yeah. If I had Class C on my side, I wouldn't have to worry about that. Oh well. You know where I spend most of my time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You spend most of your time in bed.
Yeah, so I don't have to worry. I'm only kidding. I'm on single side band ESSB mode.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I'm just giving you a hard time, Marty. It was fun on talking on AM today, though. For the first time, I didn't have that 60 hertz modulation, and the scope waveform looks so much clearer, and got some good reports. You know, KK4IBG listens on a Flex 5000, and he is a very critical audio guy, and he gave me a good report. So if I get a good report from Bobby, I know I'm doing well.
Roger, I think there's a breaking station. Come on in. N2IRJ, name is Marty.
N2RRJ, I believe. What, Marty, Whiskey Golf 4, good to see you pop by and the other gentleman. One of you mentioned the AL-572. I just had delivery on one of those units. I started in the amateur world with a solid-state amp. An automatic amp, Expert 1K, they're made in Rome. And I always wanted a tube amp, missed it once and everything. So right now I'm talking on an automatic amp, solid state. But can you give me some pointers on the AL-572, which I have near out, it's sitting here and ready to roll over.
Hi there. You have a good signal in here, but it sounds like there's a little RF getting into your audio. My name is Kevin. And my call is Whiskey Bravo 4 Alpha India Oscar. Unfortunately, neither one of us has the AL-572. Marty has the Ameritron ALS 1300, I believe. I think that's right. And I have a Clipperton L, which does use 572Bs in it, but it's not the AL-572. You sound like you're getting a little bit of RF into your signal, into your audio on peaks, but you have a good strong signal into Western Pennsylvania. The name is Kevin.
Hey Kevin, what's your full business here, Papa? On 75 meters, I have had the amp up on 1200 watts. That's one of the problems with a solid state amp, you don't have the variation. It's a little bit prone to causing RF. I've done everything in the book. And on 75 meters, at 1200 watt setting, I did get a little bit. It used to be real bad, so I made some painful changes. I went to 600 watts. Do you detect it now?
Oh, yeah, it's worse than ever now. It actually sounds to me, I could be wrong, but it actually sounds to me like your synthesizer is losing lock from RF ingress, because on voice peaks, it starts to make this weird buzzing sound, like it's actually FMing or something, buzzing in a frequency-modulated kind of matter and losing phase lock. And when that happens, it makes it very hard to understand your voice. Over.
This is N2RJ. Grabbing it. I made a real quick recording, but he unkeyed too quickly, so I didn't get it. I'll make another one on his next transmission, but here it goes.
Oh, yeah, it's worse than ever now. It actually sounds to me, I could be wrong.
Unfortunately, it was mostly you, Kevin, but I did get a tail end. I wanted him to be able to hear it, so come on back, friend, and I'll make a recording of you. Not just any recording, a special type that's uncolored, so you'll be able to hear exactly how you're sounding. Over.
Okay. Whiskey Golf 4, this is here, Papa. It's quite strange. 99% of the time,
comment for Superb Audio. No RL, no nothing. Right now, I'm talking on a Buckmaster on 25th. Dipole, I have RF check solar. I have a high-powered 2,000-watt Balaam. I'm using the best DX coax. Just talking to get you a good length of a tape there. Running again with out the amp. How's that all?
Your signal is perfect without the amp. It's not anywhere near as strong, but there is no RF in the audio now.
That's correct.
Now I've got 600 watts with this automatic amp on 1, 2, 3.
Okay, now it's clear. Now there's no RF in the audio. Something must be intermittent.
Yeah. Yeah, it must be intermittent. I concur. I'll still play you the recording, but it doesn't have the defect that we were trying to tell you about. Your signal sounds weaker because the amplifier was off, but it didn't have the problem anymore. And yet, like he said, when you turned it right back on now, you got your power back, and it wasn't doing the RF thing. Here's the old recording.
Here, Papa. Quite strange. 9897.com. Superb audio. No RF. No nothing. Right now, I'm talking on a Buckmaster on center pick. Dipole. I have RF choke on them. High-powered 2,000-watt Balaam. I'm using the best DX coax. Just talking to get you a good of a tape there. Running again with out the amp. How's that all?
Your signal.
Okay, this is Marty N2RJ in real time again, returning it to you in, is it Texas? Over.
WG4VSP, Marty wants to know where you're located.
Okay, WG4VSP. No, I'm Roanoke, Virginia, Roanoke, VA. And Marty, right now I'm running 1,200 watts. Do you detect anything counting 1, 2, 3?
No, you sound perfectly normal now.
Now have a strong signal plus improved audio. Let me let you hear yourself. Here goes.
VA. And Marty, right now I'm running 1,200 watts. Do you detect anything counting 1, 2, 3?
I do not detect anything. Let me pass it over to Kevin for his critique. He's the audio expert. Pick it up, Kevin.
Yeah, I don't hear the RF. I do not hear the RF in there at all right now. So whatever problem you have, perhaps there's a loose connection somewhere, and when that connection lets go, the RF does a number on your rig, and then when the connection is restored, everything's fine again. Something like that must be going on. I will tell you that RF ingress is something that both Marty and I have fought over the years. It's a thing that's very hard to predict. It's a thing that seems to change on its own sometimes, and it's the biggest pain in the neck that there is in amateur radio. Well, maybe there are a couple jammer stations that are bigger pains in the neck, but it's one of the biggest pains in the neck we ever encounter. This is WB4AIO, and by the way, what's your name, VSP?
Okay, my name is Gordon. Well, Officer Romeo Delta, Officer November. There's one thing that I did that didn't have a chance to tell you during the process of the changes. I took off the processing. Now, this is a Yaesu 950. I operate it without any processing whatsoever, no menu changes. I've had it about 10, 11 months. I'll also tell you, at 68 years old, I decided to get my license just about 11 months ago. I've been a shortwave listener all my life. I mean, from razor blade sets to crystals and whatever, and took a class here at Roanoke a couple of Saturdays. Third Saturday, past the tech, and then I passed the general at the same time. It's extra by four. But electrical engineering background serves well in that respect. I need to know what they wanted me to call a golf ball or an apple or an orange. So that being said, I went into HF, and I kept the Yaesu without any menu settings. And then I had a couple of audio, whatever you want to call them. I'm not demeaning them. I'm not demeaning you people. I appreciate what you're doing. But to, you know, change this. So I went in one night with a fellow, and he had me change this and this and this and this. And I've had some good reports, but I've had some bad ones. So I found on 75 meters that I will get a little bit of this report. And at one time I associated it with the automatic amp, and it was true because of proximity of equipment. I also use about 5,000 volt amps of support power. Everything's conditioned at the Linsky system. That had a lot to do with it, that proximity. I'm using a lot of ferrite, and as you say, RF is insidious. It's very serious. It's like the study of the phenomenon of lighting in the utility industry where I came from, our lightning. There's a certain place when I use this audio processing that 90% of the time it gives me very good reports. I get on 75 meters at some frequencies. And I have the antennas peaked at certain places. I have about 12 different antennas. I built 3/4 of those out of scrap. And my scrap ones do better than the store-bought ones. So I appreciate what you came back and told me, and I was not being devious when I made that change, but I was doing things so quickly, I didn't have a chance to tell you what I had done to clear it. So I hope now you give me a good report. So I wish you got four victors here, Popeye and Roanoke.
Okay, very good, Gordon, and congratulations on getting your ham ticket after being an SWL. I started out as a shortwave listener, too, back in 1968, and I got my ticket in 72. And I would say if it wasn't for listening to ham radio operators, I might not have gone on to work in broadcasting, which I did for many years also. Started out listening to the AMers on ham radio right here on 75 meters. And still operate AM sometimes. You had a very strong signal, that transmission. You were close to 25 over 9. In fact, you achieved 25 over 9 several times. And I think I can detect a tiny trace of RF ingress when between your words, when you are speaking at your softest in the spaces between syllables. When you speak up loud, it seems to suppress it. But when the gain comes up, maybe the ALC gain is coming up between your words, and it seems to be just a trace is still there. But you'd have to really you have to listen hard to detect it. Probably is impairing your intelligibility ever so slightly. But when you had your processor on, boy, it was absolutely going crazy, making it very, very hard to understand your words. I hope you can figure something out to change the grounds around or move your antenna or put up metal siding around your shack or who knows what you have to do. I'm not going to stay in here much longer. So, Marty, is there anything else we have to cover before I shut my eyes? I need to shut my eyes very soon. WB4AIO in the group.
Well, I want to say I concur with you regarding Gordon's signal. I measured it this time using my vertical antenna, and I have a very Scotch S meter, and he was 10 over. So you know how strong that is. With the beverage, he was about an S9. So the band must have been taking a fade right then, because like you said, you're receiving about a 25 in western Pennsylvania, and I'm here in the central part of New Jersey, and I too heard just on the edge. It was so marginal that I almost wasn't going to say anything about it. But it's nothing like when he first came. When he first came on frequency, I was actually adjusting my frequency here, thinking that it was off, And then I realized, oh, it's not off frequency. It's just sounding that way. And then you said it's RF, and I of course, recognized it as such then. So the only thing, other thing I could add maybe is, this is probably too complicated, this point what you're trying to get fixed first. But in analyzing your audio, I think he had a peak at around 200 hertz. I don't know. Let me throw it back to you, Kevin, and you can throw it back to Gordon. You can comment if you noticed that peak.
Oh, well, I'm not really paying attention to frequency response right now. I'm just trying to see if I can figure out why that... and I really don't know why, but see if I can figure out what's going on with the RF. So go ahead, Gordon.
Okay, I just brought the mic gain down to about 35 setting from a 45. That might help a little bit. My ALC now is inside of the what I call the blue line. As far as making any more changes, I have a ground bus. I use bus angle. It's 4x4 aluminum. It's grounded with 1-inch wide 10 copper braid. Several loop grounds, also copper grounds to water pipe. Each piece is bonded separately, as it should be with home runs. I use alpha delta grounded switches on every antenna coming in, so on each coax, and then outside I have the alpha delta surge suppressors. I have changed the physical distance. I do have a lot of antennas suppressed, if you will, or contained within some small real estate. The Buckmaster, for instance, should have been in a straight line. It has 6 different angles in it. And the gentleman who built it up in Middle Virginia says, of course, it was never tested for that installation. But I have worked a number of countries with it, and if it's not broke, I don't try to fix it. The audio on 75 at first, it was just terrible. Everything I did was bad. I talked to several gentlemen of your caliber, and I do want to tell you I appreciate what you're doing. You know, some people take this as demeaning. I don't. I appreciate what you're doing. I like to talk to amateurs that are amateurs. A lot of the people out there, they know no more about radio than if they fell out of the truck. I saw people in the class, and I thought it demeaning to these people who came in to learn of radio, and all they did was said, just learn, memorize the questions, and pass your test. They came out not knowing how to measure an antenna, cut a frequency. They didn't know anything when they came out, and you can't know anything until Saturdays. Now, I'm on my soapbox right now. But that being said, appreciate what you're doing. If you'll pass me, if this maybe mic gain helped a little bit, I probably am not going to rack my brain too much more. My wife of 50 years has Alzheimer's. I keep her here, so that's my primary objective. I do want to ask one of you before you go and close your eyes. I have a collection of... I think one of you in broadcasting of RCA mics. I have BX44s, RC77s, DK5s. I've used the 77 on here with adapters. I get very good reports with that type mic. But then I've been chastised by some audio enthusiasts that I'm trying to get too perfect an audio because amateur radio should not be broadcast quality. So your comments, please. Whiskey Golf 4, Victor Sierra Papa.
Oh, I love broadcast audio quality on ham radio. I think Marty will agree with me, but it's not for everybody. Some people don't like to go to the extra trouble, and it's not as easy as just accepting the bandwidth that the factory gives you and just plugging a mic in and talking. So amateur radio has room for many different enthusiasms and many different kinds of experimentation. As for me, I love to try to achieve good quality broadcast-type audio, both on single sideband and AM. I think it brings across the personality of the other person and nuances of expression that can't be had any other way, actually transmits more information, And in addition to that, it's a challenge. It teaches you things, and it's very aesthetically pleasing. Maybe not as aesthetically pleasing as I'm hearing a noise. I think it's an airplane or something going by. I could even see it on the spectrum analyzer. That's wild. Anyway, I think it's aesthetically pleasing. Maybe not as aesthetically pleasing as a beautiful woman, but, you know, pretty darn good anyway. So having said that, I will say that when you first came back, your audio sounded perfectly clean. But then it seemed to deteriorate as time went on. After about 30 seconds or so, it sort of returned to the fairly clean audio you had in the previous transmission, where there seemed to be just a trace of RF getting in there. So that's my observation. WB4AIO, what do you think, Marty?
I concur with everything you said. And being that Gord is open-minded and he wants to improve things and appreciates feedback on the truth, so we can help him. And it turns out that I did re-verify that you have two peaks, one at 200 hertz, which is the predominant one, and another one at 2,000. And when it goes once around again to Kevin, even though I know he's waiting for the bed, you can maybe verify that if you happen to look. I use the accumulate peak function to determine that. And also, we should tell you that we're operating in enhanced single sideband, ESSB. Our bandwidth is 7.5 kilocycles, and you're not hearing the same as what you think we sound like. We sound full fidelity like a commercial broadcast station. In fact, we can actually go beyond their limits if we want to, but this is where it's comfortable for the distance involved. It's another dimension of new technology that wasn't available before when you were crystal bound. I used to change crystals and change things that way, and I had some success, but nothing like this, software-defined radio. I want to say one other thing regarding what Kevin said, commenting on your deterioration. It turns out that in the beginning, you came back beautiful when you said you turned down your audio gain, and then it seemed as though you cranked the gain back up a little more without saying anything. Unless this problem is just mysteriously happening on its own, you never got bad, so don't worry about that. But all I can say is, in the very beginning, after you turned down that audio, that was where you were at your best. And to RJ, over to you, Gordon.
Okay, WD4VSP, and I make no changes physically. Now, there's one thing I'm probably guilty of, and I'm lying in the bed using the original handheld mic that came with the unit, MX31. And this mic has a setting on the reverse that the manufacturer says is a setting in one position for the American voice or pattern, and one for the Japanese. And I have a friend in North Carolina, Western Salem, who is into audio, and he's into linguistics and whatever, and he says that that is a actual, what should I say, true statement that Yaesu makes, because of the way the Japanese voice accentuates certain levels and variations and whatever. I'm privy to. I'm the layman when it comes to that. Now, I wonder if I'm guilty of letting the mic slip or getting close to me, or I'm not holding it properly. So I'm just talking a little bit. I'm still at the same setting, and I'm trying to be cognizant of the way I'm holding the mic. And I'd like a comment, if you will. Is it practical to use one, let's say, of my D77 RCAs? One of those mics is worth many times the radio. I'm using an amp. Well, not the amp. The amp was more than that. I don't think I'll ever use the deck 44s. They're very heavy. Very heavy, Mike. But the 77, I get just beautiful reports back from it. And also the BK5 studio announcer's mic, one of those. So turn it back to you, WG4VSP.
Okay, WG4VSP, WB4AIO in the group. Oh, I've got a relay problem here. Now I'm back up to full power. WB4AIO for ID. Well, the RF is creeping into your audio even a little bit more than during the last transmission, but it's not horrible yet. I am understanding what you're saying. It's what Marty and I have discovered is that sometimes just the position of your body with reference to the equipment, the position in which you hold the microphone, all of these things can sometimes seriously affect an RF ingress problem. You lean your body 45 degrees over one way and the RF will go away, and you lean it backwards against your bed frame and it may come back stronger than ever. You just don't know about that stuff. Sometimes changing the microphone will get rid of it. You never know. I'd like to hear what the 44 BX and the 77 DX sound like. I love those old RCA ribbon microphones. I'm extremely jealous of you for having them. And in fact, I think just because of the good advice we're giving you, you have so many, you should send each of us one of them. Not serious, but I'd like to hear what they sound like. Probably you would want to shape the audio, though, with an equalizer or something to compensate for the characteristics of the microphone. Right now, I would say even when the RF is out of your audio, it is kind of a lower mid-range emphasis in your audio right now instead of a more flat response. But anyway, getting rid of the RF is goal number one, and I'm going to go to bed. I shouldn't be up this late, but I've greatly enjoyed it, and I hope some of the things we've mentioned lead you on to discovering what the problem is, Gordon. I know that is just absolutely maddening to have RF in your system, even though you're doing everything right. Sometimes you do everything right. You ground everything perfectly. You route things in a professional manner. You shield things. Everything is just exactly the way it should be, and RF city is everywhere. It's interfering. It's feeding back. It's buzzing. You can't even operate. And other stations, you build another station, and you don't ground anything. The wire is a rat's nest. The antenna is 1 foot away from your window, and there's no RF. There's just like no rhyme or reason to that stuff. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that the electric field and the magnetic field from the antenna are not fully formed when the antenna is nearby. And so you get all sorts of peaks and valleys of signal strength and all sorts of magnetic and electrical fields that can enter equipment in numerous different ways. It just makes it very, very unpredictable, the interaction between your equipment and the local fields created by your antenna system. So I wish you well. I have some RF ingress problems here myself, but at the moment they're sort of almost under control. N2IRJ, Marty, great to hear you. I'm delighted I ran across you, and I'm not going to send you this whole recording because it's so long, but maybe tomorrow morning I will send you a juicy excerpt from it so you can hear how you're sounding with the Samson microphone. I think you'll be pleased. I'm certainly pleased. N2IRJ with WG4VSP. This is WB4AIO saying good morning or good night or whatever it is, and if you have a question, ask it right away because I'm going to turn this stuff off real soon.
Okay, this is N2IRJ returning, Jackson, New Jersey. Name is Marty Gordon, and I finally got your call sign, WG4VSP. I wanted to first comment about your wife. I have complete compassion for the situation you're up against. My mother, this past year ago, took a stroke, paralyzing her, and she's in really bad condition. And in addition to that, both my wife and I have certain disabilities. So it's here's the main coincidence, however. Roanoke, Virginia. That's where my wife was born. I want to say she might have lived on Bosworth Avenue Street or something like that. I'd have to ask in the future QSO to tell you. But this is lengthy. Kevin might... bear with me because it's about 3 minutes long, but I did record him finally. I did record Gordon with the problem creeping in. So if Gordon listens to this recording for the first time, he'll finally be able to hear what we're talking about. And at another point, when he gets back that perfect fidelity and high signal, I should make another recording, and he would definitely be able to tell the difference. And as for the audio shaping, yeah, what you said, Kevin, I concur with, and I still I'm still seeing the 200 peak and the secondary 2000 peak. The 2000 peak is actually lower than the 200, so there's a lot of energy in the low part of your voice. So maybe that audio shaping that Kevin spoke of is in order. I by the way, told I'm experimenting myself with a different microphone, and he was flattering me tonight that I had a microphone like you had, the ribbon. I don't, but I'm trying to achieve similar excellence that you could do too. But there is something wrong. Here goes. I'm going to play you so you can hear the situation we're telling you about creeping in. This is N2IRJ, Jackson, New Jersey.
I'm lying in the bed using the original handheld mic that came with the unit, MX31. And this mic has a setting on the reverse that the manufacturer says is a setting in one position for the American point or pattern and one for the Japanese. And I have a friend in North Carolina, Mr. Salem, who is into audio, and he's into linguistics and whatever, and he says that that is a actual, what should I say, true statement that Jay-Z makes, because of the way the Japanese voice accentuates certain levels and variations and whatever. I'm pretty sure I'm the layman when it comes to that. Now, I wonder if I'm guilty of letting the mic slip or getting close to me, or I'm not holding it properly. So I'm just talking a little bit. I'm still at the same setting, and I'm trying to be cognizant of the way I'm holding the mic. And still, I'm assuming, if you will, if it's practical, to use one, let's say, of my B77 RCAs. One of those types of questions down the radio, I'm using it, well, not the actual one. I don't think I'll ever use the 44s. They're very heavy mic. But the 77, I get this beautiful report back from it. And also the BK5 studio around the mic. So turn it back to you, so people get this.
Okay, this is Marty again, live N2IRJ, and I'll say to Kevin, send me the whole recording. You don't have to cut and splice. I'd like to be able to hear what my recording sounded back to Gordon. Or unless you don't want to, if you prefer a smaller file to deal with, that's okay too. But kind of less work for you to just even send the whole file. WG4VSP. Sorry for the long key down, but I really wanted you to be able to benefit from hearing exactly what we're talking about. Over.
Hey, WG4VSP. I tell you, that brought it home. Not that I disregarded anything either one of you said in the first part of the conversation, but I can tell you, I did not fully understand. I appreciate it. I don't think I fully understood. That brought it home. That brought it squarely on the front doorstep. And that's bad. It's good that you brought it, bad that it's that bad. So, and I see the variations. I've got to work on that. But I will tell you, it does not happen. I've never heard a report on any other frequencies other than the loss is 75. I don't work any lower. On 20, 40, 17, 15, whatever, I've always gotten very good reports. As far as the shaping the audio when I'm using Mother Evans. I do have a it's a German make unit that gives me variations. I can't remember the name of that unit, but it I can shape this tone for vocals and whatever. But some morning, day, night, evening, I'd like to get back together, and I'd love input from you gentlemen on use of maybe the 77, more especially on use of just the regular mic that I have. I've got a Howl boom set, boom mic, that I've used somewhat. Get good reports off of that. But I'd like to work on the fact that 99% of the audio problems is always in the 75-meter band. And why is that? What characteristics? Is it more prone? I've asked that of a lot of engineers. I don't know. It's particular to my situation, and wherever that'll be, I'll find it one day. I do use a lot of ferrite. I'm bonding every coax. In fact, took some of it off because it was not helping at all. I have bypassed my Linsky conditioning system to see if that was causing it. That does have some effect because of the all of the equipment that it takes to condition the AC. It will also act as a pickup and cause some interception of the RF. So you're right. It's insidious. It'll run you crazy. But I will work on it. Let me put it back in the queue so anybody wants to go to bed, they can go to bed, or they probably already sleep. I do appreciate it again. I'd love to get back together. This is Ham Radio and Dispense, and you two gentlemen are professionals, and I appreciate you. WG4VSB.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say, Gordon, N2IRJ here. I will turn it over to Kevin so that he can comment and then go to bed. And I'll do the same. I'll let him turn it over to me, and then I'll sign out, and you can maybe meet us up here another time. Maybe I should start monitoring this frequency more. We do a net, three nets on this frequency throughout the week, Sunday night at around 10 o'clock Eastern local time, and that's not a good time, but at least you'd find me, and I'd know that you'd maybe want to meet at a feature point. And we also do it sometimes Sunday night, an hour earlier, same frequency or vicinity, you know, not necessarily this frequency, depending upon if it's busy, and then on Wednesday. So we should hopefully meet each other again. Heck, I might start monitoring this frequency just in case you give me a call and we could help out in some way. Although Kevin, I think, would be the best. I'll still add my two cents, and I'm glad my recording helped you so you finally got to hear what we were talking about previously, where you were sounding perfect and beautiful, how it changed. And by the way, changing frequency makes a big difference. It's possible that you might have that problem up here at 3995 kilocycles, but you might be okay down at 3600 kilocycles. It definitely will change from band to band. That's a huge jump. Go ahead, Kevin, pick it up, and then if you want, you can turn it over to me, and I'll sign out to WB4AIO, Virgil 3. This is N2IRJ.
Yeah, okay, I did hear all of that. Your recording was perfect, except for a slight addition of noise from your receiver. It was a perfect representation of the way Gordon's sounding, so I hope that was helpful to him. He can hear that the audio is not as pure as it ought to be. It's somewhat distorted, and it sounds like RF getting into it. And to Gordon, there's nothing special about 75 meters that makes it more prone to RF ingress in your equipment. Many people have more trouble with 40, for example, and many people have more trouble with 20 in the higher bands. It's unique to your particular situation. It could be that if you took your whole ham station and moved it 15 feet over to the right or the left that the problem would entirely go away. You just never know with this stuff. It's very, very hard to fix, and it's very, very hard sometimes to understand what's actually happening. I say the main thing is experiment. Try changing things. Try changing the length of the feed line. You know, add 30 feet of feed line and see what happens. Move the antenna if you can. Hard to say, though. Ferrites are a good fix sometimes. Changing grounding around. Sometimes removing grounds helps. But, of course, if you remove grounds and fix the problem on 75, you might reintroduce it on 40 meters. So very, very good luck to you in solving it, and I hope it's much easier than you anticipate. 73, and I'll give it to you, Marty. This is really my last transmission. I'm actually crazy to be up this late. N2IRJ with WG4VSP standing on the sides for a moment. This is WB4AIO. Good night and good luck.
Well stated, Kevin, and it's 3:41 a.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time right now, just to date stamp this recording. If we need to refer back to it to help you out, Gordon, we'll be able to do so. So I'll pass it over to you now, Gordon, and say 73 WG4VSP. I'm also clearing out with Kevin, calling it a night. This is N2IRJ.
Okay, appreciate it. Let's go for this year, Papa. Let me give you both of you an email address if you don't mind. Maybe we can contact her together better that way. If you put down Parker Engineering, VA, lowercase, Parker Engineering, which is VA, at Verizon.net. Parker Engineering, VA, at Verizon.net. Good way to contact. And Kevin, when we're on next, I'd like to ask you, I'm hearing in your audio a background, I don't know if it's a fan or some cooling equipment, but I'm hearing something in your background audio. So just to mention that, it's very, I can hear it very plain. So good night to all, 73. Whiskey Golf 4 Victor, Sierra Papa clear, and hope you got the email address, over.
Roger, Gordon, I'm picking it up. This is Marty. Kevin is definitely out of there. He has to be up in a couple hours for work. Oh, God, help him. I have your email as Parker Engineering, and I think you said .va or something, and I didn't get the rest of it, Verizon. And just so you know, you'll probably have to contact me first. Mine is my call sign, N2IRJ at ARRL.net. That's just the league's forwarding service, N2IRJ at ARRL.net, and that'll get forwarded to me, and that's the easiest one to say over the air. So back to your email again one time. I have the Parker Engineering, and I think there might be a .va or something, and then I didn't get the end.
Okay, no dot. It'll be Parker Engineering VA, no dot, straight line, Parker Engineering VA, at Verizon.net. And when you get that, if you'll come back and give me the call letters at the ARL again, and I'll contact you. So Parker Engineering VA at Verizon.net.
Very well. Very good. We're connected, and we have a watering hole frequency, too, that you might find Kevin and I on from time to time. I think maybe I'll monitor this frequency or the quasi-ESSB frequency, Kevin, if you're listening out. Best again with all of your challenges, and apparently with this ribbon microphone that Kevin knows so much about, because he worked for decades in the broadcasting industry at radio stations, you should be able to sound as good or even maybe better than we are. So don't be disappointed tonight. It's a step in the right direction. Someone giving you an honest signal report for a change. And believe me, I went through a lot of bad signal reports myself before I was able to work out all the bugs. And the way was by playing back, and you could hear for yourself how you sounded. You even commented how helpful that was compared to any descriptions we might be giving you. So 73 Gordon, this is N2IRJ in Jackson, New Jersey. Marty, clearing with Gordon, WG4VSP. Have a good morning.
Okay, now it's N2IRJ, N2IRJ.
That is correct. It's November 2, India, Romeo and Juliet.
At ARL.net.
That's right.
Okay, I'll get you an email off. That'll get us a contact, and we can get Kevin's later. Okay, good night. 7-3, I'm on the night watch. Take care of my wife during the night. Have ladies coming in about 6 o'clock. Have cameras on and watching her. And, of course, I sleep and go back and forth. Do a lot of consulting engineering at night. Work for several utilities here and also in Australia. The VST and the call letters also work with the Virginia State Police and communications. So, good night. Whiskey Golf 4 Victor Sail Pop Up there.
Okay, I look forward to future conversations with great interest. See ya.